Howdy, howdy, howdy. Welcome to another episode of the Steakhouse Sports Podcast. I'm Chris, and glory, glory, hallelujah.
I'm Paul.
He's back and he's bad, ladies and gentlemen. We'll give out our first set of authentic records after week four and talk about who is a true contender after just 4 weeks of the season. But before we get into any of the exciting results and our records and all of our brilliant analysis, Paul, welcome back. How are you doing?
Thank you, thank you, thank you, Chris. It's great to be back. Sorry for a little two-week absence there. Life gets busy and gets in the way.
I know how it goes.
Life and work. But I'm super thrilled to be back with you, drinking some whiskey.
Yep.
Talking about football, all the good things in life.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely missed you. It was a tough road to hoe. Like, I found I was far less motivated to do the podcast without you.
Well, you did a great job.
Well, I appreciate it, but yeah. I think...
I don't at all carry the show.
We're more than the sum of our parts, I suppose.
Yeah, there you go.
But welcome back. It's great to have you. And
thank you so much.
Let's get on with the rest of the show.
All right. Well, before we jump into the results and our fun and exciting barrel wagers and all that good stuff, just a quick reminder, if you have not had a chance to check out the app and you have a few minutes, you can go to steakhousesports.com. Steak can be spelled either like the meat or the bet, and click on the link of your preferred app store to download the app and see what it's all about. All right. Well, that being said, let's jump right into those barrel wagers.
All right.
So Chris, start with you.
Thanks, Paul. So just a reminder, the barrel wagers are the predictions that Paul and I are so convinced that we're going to be right, that we would bet everything we own, including the clothes off our backs. And if we get them wrong, we'll be wearing nothing but a barrel. And I am now wearing a barrel three times over this season so far. Yeah. It's great, great stuff.
I think I've got nothing but barrels hanging in my closet at this point.
But the question, of course, Paul, is like, what is it? Why barrels? What is important about barrels?
Well, one thing that's important about barrels, besides people that used to ride them over Niagara Falls, is the fact that whiskey is made in barrels.
Indeed.
And we also love whiskey. So we started a tradition of drinking whiskey here on the show, and that probably wasn't the wisest decision because we kind of slur our speech a little bit of the time. But
you know, it's funny because I was thinking, like, we don't actually have to drink the whiskey.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? We could just say we're drinking the whiskey. No one would know. It's not a video, but
yeah.
But what's the point then? What would be the value of doing the podcast if we weren't drinking whiskey while doing the podcast? That would be silly.
And plus, it gives us some sort of hypothetical pipe dream about being sponsored by a distillery at some
right.
point.
And it will not be Bad Dog.
It won't be Bad Dog like you talked about last
week. They don't like football.
They don't support the NFL. So that's okay. We'll get past that. We'll find someone else. But even though they don't support the NFL, their whiskey's really good.
Yep.
And we're drinking it again this week. Well, you're drinking it again this week. All right. Well, it's the Grandpa's Rye. So we're still working on that bottle of Grandpa's Rye that you popped last week. Thank you for saving me some, Chris.
You bet.
Cheers. Cheers. All right, well, let's jump into the actual barrel wagers that we made, starting with my own. I've not fared very well with my barrel wagers so far this week, so I've got a lot of barrels hanging in my closet. And this one wasn't much better, although it was a little bit better. So my prediction was for the Seahawks.
I'm sorry. I can't believe this one.
So I went a little bit off the script this time, and I picked... I picked an over-under as my barrel wager, and I picked my own team, the Seahawks and Dolphins, to go well over the 54. I figured this was a slam dunk.
Yep, absolutely.
The Seahawks had scored 30-plus points in all three of their first games of the season, and their entire defense has been giving up. They were giving up passing yards at a historic clip, so... I don't remember off the top of my head what the numbers are, but through the first 3 weeks of the NFL season, they had given up the most passing yards in NFL history.
Really?
through the first 3 weeks of the season. And they had been giving up quite a lot of points too. So, you know, I just figured that it's not that Miami is, you know, necessarily lighting up scoreboards left and right, but I figured, you know, Fitzmagic might kind of bring it, and you just never know. Seahawks also had quite a few injuries on defense, so it was a little bit of a crapshoot. Plus, you know, Miami's defense is not exactly great themselves, and they're playing against Russell Wilson and the Seahawks, who have, you know, like I said, they've been scoring a lot of points, and Russell Wilson has been playing at an MVP level, throwing for tons of touchdown passes. Excuse me. Bless you.
Sorry, excuse me.
and lighting up scoreboards himself. So, like I said to you before we started recording, Chris, I was very confident that the winner of this game would score over 30 points, and the loser would probably at least score in the high 20s.
Yeah.
Pushing that total easily close to the 60-point mark. That didn't happen. but what did happen is the Dolphins scored a late touchdown and a two-point conversion to land on the push.
Yeah, attaboy.
So I'll take it.
Yeah, that was. I was watching that game. It was, 17, 13 in halftime or something like that? It was really low.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, oh, boy, Paul. I mean, when I saw your pick, I thought that was a really smart pick. I thought for sure that, you know, Fitzmagic would be able to, you know, really have his way with, I mean, not that it, that the Seahawks would lose, but I definitely thought that he would be able to put up some points, and neither team seemed to do that, which was really surprising. So,
yeah. Well, and the difference for the Seahawks in this game was, you know, with respect to the, all those passing yards and everything was, well, first of all, they had two interceptions that helped.
Yep.
But they didn't give up a deep ball.
Ah.
You know, they had been getting burned, in the previous three games, at least once or twice a game, over the top, and that they prevented that from happening in this game. So at least that helped for sure.
All right. Well, the good news for us anyway was that the Seahawks did cover the spread, which was one of our big super contest picks, but we'll get into that in just a minute. Meanwhile, my barrel wager could not have gone worse. I picked the Cardinals to win and cover the 3.5 against the Panthers, and that did not even come close to covering. I don't know what happened there, honestly. And to be honest with you, I was so mad about this pick that I didn't even watch the game. I just saw that in my understanding, at least, is that Kyler Murray did not have a good game, and I am not sure what to make of the Cardinals anymore. They had two great, you know, games to start the season,
mm-hmm.
and then including a win over the 49ers in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, you know, a one bad game is, you know, it can happen. You know, the Lions, I feel like, just had a puncher's chance of winning. But then now I'm like, I don't know what to make of the Cardinals. I don't know how you felt about the Cardinals being in the AFC or the NFC West and thinking that, God, they might win the division.
Yeah.
But now I'm thinking they are, you know, they might just be marginally better than they were last year, maybe.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I didn't watch this game either. I was really thrilled that you made this pick, because either you were going to win the barrel wager and I would have been happy for you, or you were going to lose the barrel wager and I was going to be really happy because my favorite team's division foe lost.
yeah. I mean, I thought about it, and I don't know at what point I realized that this, I think, might have been my fourth consecutive road barrel. Well, like, I was putting my barrel wager on a fourth consecutive road team,
which is
just the dumbest. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, well, why am I doing this to myself?
Under normal circumstances, I would say, yeah, what are you doing? But, I mean, really? Is there really that much of a home field advantage? I don't know.
I don't know either. But in any case, so now Paul is at 1-2-1 on the season, because you don't get a win, right? You get a push.
Yep.
I am at 1-3. So all my bravado about last week saying that Paul was going to eat my dust, that lasted not even 1 week. So,
well, hey, the Philadelphia Eagles are leading the NFC East at a 1-2-1 record. So
there you go.
I'm the Philadelphia Eagles of barrel wagers.
And I am the Dallas Cowboys. There's no good alternative.
What are you, 1-3?
The Dallas Cowboys or the Washington football team.
Yeah.
I am not the
New
York
Giants. Or the Minnesota
Giants.
Vikings.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
wow.
There you go.
But anyway, it doesn't matter. Yeah. All right, let's move on. So we will go on to the crowd results for the week. The highlights and lowlights. So the lowlights for the crowd are the...
Well, just real quick.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Chris, so because of what we'll reveal here in just a second, there's a ton of games here in the highlights and lowlights section. So we're going to kind of mix the format up a little bit. Normally, we cover all of the games later on in the show.
Yep.
But since there are so many games to talk about with respect to the highlights and lowlights, we're kind of almost like splitting the game results into two sections.
Yeah.
So we'll cover the first part here, and then we'll skip these games when we go back to the full game.
Right. That's a thank you, Paul. That's an excellent point. I mean, it is quite a remarkable, like, this was like definitely a feast or famine kind of week.
Totally.
And on top of like the number of pushes that happened this week, I think there might have been like of the, you know, 30 different wagers that there were available. I think there were like four or five pushes, which is quite remarkable for a single week. But in any case, we'll go through the lowlights for the crowd this week. These are the games in which the crowd missed all three predictions, meaning the winner, the spread, and the total.
Or two of three, right, with a push.
Well, exactly. Yeah. So, we are calling those the anti-exactas, and on the flip side, the exactas. So that's two out of three with the third being a push. In any case, so for our bagels, these are the ones where the crowd missed all three. As I said, it was Carb City this week. The crowd ate five bagels. Starting on Thursday night, the Broncos were in New York. The Jets were 1.5-point favorites. There was quite a bit of fluctuation when it came to the spread for this game. The game started out with the Broncos being favored, then finally it ended with the Jets being favored, which is quite kind of amazing. So a lot of money moving on the Jets. The total is 41. The Broncos won outright 37-28, which meant that the Broncos won and covered, and the game went over the 41. Our crowd had the Jets winning narrowly 20-18, so our crowd missed all three, including the total. It was a much higher scoring game than our crowd was predicting. In terms of the game, not really sure what to say about this. Brett Rypien, nephew of Mark Rypien, who that's his claim to fame to this point, had three interceptions, but otherwise like a pretty decent game, I guess. But,
besides those three interceptions,
yeah, I mean, but that was the other thing. We don't want to spend too much time on this, but like one of his touchdowns was literally he threw it to a Jets player, and Jerry Jeudy, their rookie receiver, made an amazing play to grab the ball from over the cornerback's head and take it in for a touchdown. So it was not a great throw by any stretch. Instead of throwing it over the outside shoulder as Russell Wilson would do, and you know, where the cornerback had no chance on it, the quarterback had every chance to make that play, but because of, you know, the Jerry Jeudy made a great individual play, he scored a touchdown. So it was a bizarre game, and I can't believe the Broncos actually won it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, the next bagel that was eaten featured the Colts and Bears game. The Bears were, the Colts were 3-point favorites.
Right.
And the total was 43. The Colts ended up winning the game 19-11. So that meant that the Colts won, covered the spread, and the total went well under 43. Our crowd thought that the Bears were going to win the game, but just in by a narrow margin, mm-hmm. which meant that the Bears would cover and thread the needle, according to the crowd, and the total would go pretty well over that 43. The crowd thought that the score would be roughly 25.5-24. So again, crowd gets all three predictions pretty well wrong here.
Yep.
Although the crowd, I'll give them a little bit of credit, there was not strong consensus in either direction here, so crowd was not very certain that the Bears would win.
No, but they were definitely buying the Nick Foles magic, I guess.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to maybe the wildest game of the weekend. The Browns were in Dallas. The Cowboys were 3.5-point home favorites. The total is 56. The Browns won 49-38, which meant that the Browns won and covered by winning, and the game went well over the 56 for a total of 87, which is quite remarkable.
Wow.
Our crowd was expecting a tighter game, and it was a tight game in general, but they were expecting a tighter game, 28-25, which meant they thought the Cowboys would win and cover just by a hair. This is where the decimal places play a role, and then the game would stay just under the 56. So they did expect a high scoring game, but not quite that high.
Yeah, and I mean, to have that over underline set at 56,
yeah,
like, that's pretty high.
Yeah, I mean, I think if there's one trend that is kind of being exposed right now, it's that the overs are the play.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get into the crowd results so far. The crowd is doing quite well when they predict the over.
Well, I think at this point in the season, though, after week four, the over-under betting lines by the sports books are also starting to catch up with that.
Yeah, so probably.
You see an over-under line of 56, and you're like, wow, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, let's get a little bit up there. Well, of course, I placed my barrel wager on a total of 54. So right. Who am I to talk? Anyway, yeah. Don't listen to
and
me.
And that was the one game of the week that probably didn't go over.
Yeah, right. Right, thanks.
Yeah.
For pointing that out.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, as you mentioned earlier, the Cardinals and the Panthers played.
Speaking of terrible barrel.
Yeah. In your barrel wager matchup, the Chris barrel wager bowl.
Yep.
of the week. The Cardinals were 3-point road favorites, and the total was 51.5. Panthers won by 10 points, 31-21, which meant that the Panthers cover as the outright underdog winners, and the total went just over the 51.5 at 52. Our crowd thought that the Cardinals would win by about 5-ish points, mm-hmm. Roughly, we'll call it 27-22. So the crowd thought the Cardinals would definitely win, cover the spread, and the total would go a little bit under that 51.5. So again, the crowd wasn't too far off on the over-under. Definitely got the wrong winner, as most people probably did.
Yeah.
And missed out on the spread by just a little bit. So another unfortunate bagel snack by the crowd there.
Yeah. Yeah. And then what we're calling the anti-exacta, so just the trifecta is when you get all three right. Exacta is when you get two right. And the anti-exacta is when you get two wrong and the third one doesn't count. So the Eagles were in San Francisco, or Santa Clara, as Paul likes to point out. The 49ers were 7.5-point home favorites. The total is 45. The Eagles won outright 25-20, which meant that they won and covered the spread. And the game ended on a push with an exact total of 45. Our crowd had the 49ers winning easily 28-19. So they missed out on all three. And I, you know, don't know what I was thinking in this particular game. You know, I think I was buying the fact that the 49ers had just smoked the Giants in New York. Mm. And I thought that they would have an easy time with an Eagles team that is not playing well at all. And Nick Mullins, the quarterback for the 49ers, seemed to really have a bad game in primetime.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I didn't quite know what to think about this one off the bat, but knowing how many injuries and how many key injuries the 49ers have had over the last couple of weeks,
yeah,
including their starting quarterback, that 7.5-point spread seemed iffy to me.
Yeah. In hindsight, it looks quite obvious. But
I mean, I'm definitely no supporter of the Eagles, and they, in my opinion, have looked like one of the worst teams in the league over the first 3 weeks of the season. So I definitely did not think that they would beat the 49ers. I mean, but I also didn't think that the 49ers would cover a 7.5-point spread with all those injuries. So,
yep.
Both things came to pass. Right. The Eagles actually won the game, and 49ers looked pretty terrible in the process. So,
yep.
Hey, win-win.
Right. All right. Well, let's get into the more positive aspects of it, Paul.
Yes. On a positive note, we're going to cover the trifectas, which, again, are the instances where the crowd got all three predictions in a game correct, or in this case, they got a couple of trifectas and a couple of exactas, mm-hmm. which, as Chris just mentioned, would be two out of three predictions correct with one push
in
each game. So starting off with the trifectas, the Saints and Lions game, Saints were 3-point road favorites, and the total was 54. The Saints won in a game that was maybe a little tighter score-wise than most people thought, but nevertheless, they covered the spread with a 35-29 victory over the Lions. So the Saints cover the spread, and the total goes pretty well over the 54. Our crowd thought that the Saints would win roughly 30-26, let's call it.
Sure.
So the crowd thought the Saints would win and cover the spread, and the total would go just over 54. So 3 for 3.
Yep.
Crowd nailed it.
Yep. And I think that this game was quite interesting. It started out with the Lions ahead by 14, and then I think the Saints scored 28 maybe unanswered, and then the Lions kind of came back to make it a game near the end, but it was not really in doubt after maybe that after maybe halftime, if I remember correctly. So So the Lions are in big trouble. But then who knows, the Saints. I don't know what to make of any team anymore. We'll get into that in a little bit. Yeah. So the other trifecta of the week, the Giants were in Los Angeles. The Rams were 13.5-point home favorites. The total is 48.5. Paul's shaking his head. Can't believe it. The Rams won a relatively close game, 17-9, which meant that the Rams won, but the Giants covered in a thread the needle prediction, and the game stayed under the 48.5. Our crowd had a narrow victory for the Rams, just barely though, 31-17.5, but a little bit of a play in there. So our crowd had the Rams winning. The Giants covering just by less than a half a point, and the game staying under 48.5 by less than a half a point. So the crowd got a trifecta really by the skin of its teeth in that particular game. And the Rams really got out of with a win, certainly in regulation, by the skin of their teeth. It took Darius Williams, I think his name is, a cornerback for the Rams. He made an outstanding interception with seconds to play, or less than 2 minutes anyway, to ice the game. And he was, I believe, the cornerback that lost, that got the pass interference in the previous week. That ruined Paul's barrel wager last week. So in any case, but it was a very, very close game, kind of nip and tuck all the way, and the Rams pulled it out in the end. So,
yeah, not a good look by the Rams.
No.
Facing off against the hapless Giants. But they won the game nevertheless.
Yep.
So... they get credit for that, but man, 13.5-point favorite. Like, anytime you see that, you got to be a little bit wary of that.
Yeah, for sure.
And you know, one of the things we've talked about more recently is our crowd. You know, when our crowd predicts the thread the needle, so to speak. So that's when the crowd thinks that the underdog will still lose but cover the spread. We call that thread the needle because usually the spread is not nearly double digits, not nearly this big. Anytime the spread is, you know, 13.5, 14 points, something like that, it's, you can't really qualify that necessarily as a thread the needle.
That is definitely not threading a needle. Yeah.
Yeah. That always makes me nervous when it's a double digit spread like that. It can go either way. Let's just say that.
Yep.
It always makes me a little nervous, but the crowd got 3 for 3 right there. So credit where credit's due. That's awesome.
Indeed.
The first of our two exactas then featured the Chargers and Bucks. Tampa Bay were 7-point favorites at home. The total was 42.5, and the Bucks won the game 38-31. So the Bucks win. They push on the cover. They won by 7 points, and the total went well over that 42.5. Our crowd thought that the Bucks would win about 28-19. So the crowd thought the Bucks would win and cover the spread and that the total would go over 42.5. So they get the over and the cover correct. Oh, sorry, the over and the win correct, but miss out on that push
right
to the cover.
Yep. Yeah, and I think that this was a game, well, it felt like there was a chance for the Bucks to put it away with a touchdown late, and of course, they chose to kick a field goal and, you know, ruin everybody's day. So thanks a lot, Tom Brady, once again. All right, well, let's go to our last exacta.
Did Tom Brady kick the field goal again this time?
No, but he chose not to score a touchdown. I assume he had the opportunity.
Do like one of those drop kicks?
No. I assume that Tom Brady had the opportunity. He looked and saw a touchdown on the field and chose to throw it away or whatever. Yeah. And then ultimately, they had to kick a field goal because of his terrible choices.
He must have thought it was third down.
Foreshadowing for week 5, but in any case, we
did not record this on Thursday night.
All right, let's move on to the last game of the week. The last exacta, the Ravens were in Washington. The football team was, or the TBAs were, 14-point home underdogs. The total was 45.5. The Ravens won 31-17, which meant that they won but covered, they pushed on the cover, and the game went over the 45.5 just by a bit. And our crowd had almost exactly. I don't think I noticed this the first time. They predicted a 31-17 rounding down and up, respectively, win, which is pretty awesome.
Wow. Right,
congratulations, crowd. You got the score almost exactly right, except for those damn decimal places.
Yeah. Well, that would have been a 9-point score then, right? No.
10.
Well, no, because of the...
Oh, right. Sorry.
The push on the cover.
Yeah, 8. 8.
Because yeah,
you can't get that, yeah.
Theoretical, so,
yeah. That's the saddest score there is, really. So, in any case, so the crowd had the Ravens winning and covering the spread, and the game going over the 45.5, and of course, with the push on the cover, the crowd only got 2 of 3 correct. So, wow, I you know, we should talk that. I might have to pump that up a little bit more on social media.
Yeah.
That's
way to go, crowd.
That
was pretty awesome.
Good job.
All right. Well, let's move into the weekly crowd summary. Overall, this week, the crowd had a very more than respectable total of 56 prediction points. Again, the prediction point scoring model, the crowd and individuals get 3 points, 2 points for a win, 2 points for predicting correctly against the spread, 2 points for the over-under, and then 1 bonus point if you get any one of those things exactly right. For a theoretical maximum of 10, you can't get 9. You can get 8.
As we just mentioned, 7 and 6.
So a really, really good score is 6. Anything above beyond that is kind of gravy.
Yep.
The crowd across all 16 games last week got 56 points. Pretty darn good. The crowd went 9-6 straight up, bringing the total overall record straight up to 45-18, which is a very solid 71% winning percentage. Against the spread, the crowd went just under 500 here this week, thanks to a couple of pushes, which didn't help. So the crowd was 6-7-2 against the spread this week. Overall, against the spread, winning percentage 53% at 32-28-3. And against the total, the crowd had a pretty rough week this week after a stellar week last week, going 4-9-2 against the total to bring the total record against the total to 32-26-5. 5 pushes on the total. Wow.
Yeah.
Through 4 weeks, that's pretty high.
Yeah.
But that brings the crowd's overall percentage to 55 on the over-under. We had 9 total unique predictors this week.
Yep, and including a couple of people that we don't really know. So welcome back, Jesse. He's been with us for a couple of weeks now, and Gus Dawson came back as well. His username is BodySurf. So welcome back, gents. We hope you're enjoying your stay here at the Steakhouse.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
All right, well, let's go to a little bit more detail into the crowd record so far. These are the kind of the stats for how the crowd predicts with each game. So straight up, our crowd is predicting in week 4, the crowd predicted the favorite to win 14 times, and they went 9-5 in those games, and they predicted an underdog to win outright, and then missed on that single prediction. So the crowd is 41-16 predicting the favorite, and 4-2 predicting the underdog to win outright, which is kind of impressive. We've never really tracked this before, but hey, 4-2 after 4 weeks, that's not too bad. Picking the spread, predicting the favorites this week, the crowd went 4-4-2 for bringing the record to 14-12-3 overall, so pretty close to 500. Meanwhile, predicting the thread, the Nino picks 2-2 this week for overall record now of 14-14. So still kind of like right around that 50% mark.
It's a toss-up.
Yeah. And then, we mentioned it before, but picking the underdog to win outright, the crowd got that one wrong, which means that that brings their overall total to 4-2 overall. Finally, against the total, the crowd predicted the over in 8 games, going 3-4-1. But the record there predicting the over was 21-11-3, which means that at least for right now, the over seems to be where the money is. Meanwhile, the crowd predicted 7 games predicting the under and went 1-5-1 predicting the under this week. So it's kind of funny when you look at the numbers, Paul. The crowd kind of got the numbers flipped, right? Because it looks like there were, 5 eight correct overs and five correct unders, and the crowd just didn't seem to flip the coin in the right direction this time.
Yeah,
and
so it happens.
You know, unfortunately about that, the crowd is still trying to get its total legs under it. But, you know, they're still doing pretty well at 55%. I'm pretty happy about that. So, all right. And then before we get to the hot take counter, I'll do the quick contest results for my bookie. You know, last week I mentioned we went 1-4, and I was hoping that the crowd would redeem itself. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. The crowd had a 1.5 to 3.5 record this week, which is not the comeback we were hoping for. They predicted the crowd, the Seahawks to cover the 6 at the Dolphins, which was a win. Thank you, Russ Wilson. They also predicted the Bucks to cover the 7 versus the Chargers, which ended up as a push, as we mentioned. And then, of course, my barrel wager of Cardinals -3 at the Panthers, that was a loss. Mm. Bears +3 versus the Colts, also a loss. And the 49ers -7.5. Versus the Eagles, also a loss. So, you know, I did want to mention one thing, Paul, about this, is that I had actually skipped out. There were a couple of games that had our formula that, you know, kind of hinted at this formula. And I actually have to look back and see which ones those were. But basically what I did was I ignored any thread the needle predictions just because our crowd had been doing so poorly against those. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if I just stuck with those.
Stick to the script,
Chris. I guess we have to. That was my bad. Sorry, friends. So I will make sure to stick to the script, not switch up midstream, because that's obviously stupid. What the hell do I know? I don't know anything. So
yeah, well, and the crowd's doing okay on the thread the needle, so
yeah, I guess that's true.
Don't shy away from it too much.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, prior to this past week, it seemed like they were taking a bath on the thread the needles.
Yeah, but, for sure.
Nevertheless,
well, last season was especially bad.
Yeah, exactly. See, I wasn't like just, you know,
I get it,
you know, on a whim, but
I get it.
Yeah,
all right, well, let's step on up to the hot take counter, where we can ring that bell and have a nice fat steak delivered to us and a whiskey maybe.
Yeah.
Or we could, instead of eating steak, talk about some observations after week 4. So beyond week 4 being the week of the push, so to speak, it also moves us past the quarter pole. I can't believe the season is a quarter of the way over.
Yeah,
it's insane.
It is amazing.
The first 4 weeks went by just like crazy.
Yeah.
So we're going to spend a little bit more time talking about the concept that you raised last week, which is this idea of authentic records. So kind of looking at each team after these, after the first quarter of the season, you know, who their opponents have been, what their opponent records are, and trying to kind of assess how authentic their records are based on the winning percentages, mm-hmm. You know, strength of schedule, if you will, mm-hmm. Of those teams. So let's break it down by conference, and I'll start off with the NFC, and you can cover the AFC.
Sure.
So starting with the, a few of the teams that are, have pretty solid records after the first 4 weeks of the season, beginning with my team, the Seahawks, who are 4-0 after the first 4 games. They have wins against the Falcons, Patriots, Cowboys, and Dolphins. Those teams combined, Seahawks opponents have a cumulative record of 4-12, which is not good. But that's kind of been a common theme that we'll see here. The Seahawks are a +33 in net points. So this is another aspect that we last season kind of started talking about, maybe around this time, maybe a little bit later in the season. But you know, there is this notion that there is a correlation between a team's net points and victories, or you know, results. Seahawks are 4-0. They've scored 33 more points than they've given up this season, which is pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, like, you know, let's set the tone here now. Like, you know, they've played 4 games, which means they've outscored their opponents by more than a touchdown in every game.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a good, to me, as far as like you know, just on its face, it feels like winning by at least a touchdown, that feels like you're winning games comfortably. And
well, and as a Seahawks fan, it is a freaking breath of fresh air because I felt like every single game last year, every victory they had was by like less than 3 points,
like the skin of your teeth every single time.
I mean, They won a game by a field goal in overtime. They won a game on a missed field goal by the Rams, you know, at the last second in regulation. I mean, it seemed like week in and week out they were winning by like 1 point or losing by a field goal or 1 point or whatever. So, to have a plus 33 after 4 weeks feels like a very comfortable margin.
Right.
The next team, the Packers, also 4-0 and have looked like world beaters, to be honest, in the first 4 weeks of the season. They are just putting up tons of points. The Packers and Seahawks both have scored over 30 points in all four of their games this year. I feel like the Packers might have gone over 40 at least once.
They did for sure. They beat the Lions 42-21.
Yeah. Okay, so they've got wins against the Vikings.
And the Vikings, 43. They scored 43.
Wow, good memory. You're still
the alcohol is, you know, it goes in and out. Like the first couple of drinks, I forget everything. And then after three drinks, I'm like, you know.
You just like turn into Rain Man.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Aaron Rodgers had 353 yards passing and four touchdowns.
253 toothpicks. All right. Packers. Well, Chris, you did admit to me that you know you can recite every single Super Bowl winner in chronological order. So
from 1980, I think I could do it.
I think you could do all of them.
No. The '70s are completely lost to me.
Okay.
I don't want to get over my skis on that one.
Okay.
Since the first Raider Super Bowl on, I think.
Okay.
I
can, so. Well, that's fair.
Yeah.
That's still pretty Rain Man-esque. I knew a guy in high school junior high, super weird guy. I don't even remember his name. He was interesting.
Okay.
And he literally did know the winner of every single Super Bowl to that point. I mean, I was in junior high in the early 90s, so or late. Yeah, early 90s.
Yeah, sure.
God, I'm getting old. I don't even remember. But I'll never forget sitting in the library, and he's like randomly said, oh, yeah, I know the winner of every Super Bowl. I swear he knew the score, too.
Really?
Which would just be insane. That would be very much like Rain Man.
But yeah.
I digress.
Yes.
The Packers have beat the Vikings, Lions, Saints, and Falcons, who also have a cumulative record of 4-12. Packers are at a plus 51 net points, which is good enough for tops in the entire NFL. Mm-hmm. So they have the highest point differential in their favor. But they've played a lot of crappy teams, just like the Seahawks. So, the Bears have wins against the Lions, Giants, and Falcons. We're missing one there.
We are missing one. Who are we missing? Oh, the Colts. No, they lost to the Colts.
Oh, so, yeah. They're 3-1.
Yeah.
That
sorry.
Makes sense. So their victories were against teams that have a cumulative 1-11
record. 1-11. That's not good.
Not good. And they're sitting at a plus 5 net points.
Yep.
So the Bears have won three close games by the skin of their teeth.
Yep.
We'll see how that turns out. Doesn't sound very sustainable.
No.
And then finally, the Rams have wins against the Cowboys, Eagles, and Giants. Again, crappy cumulative record.
Really?
2-14. The Rams do have plus 26 net points, though, better than the Bears. So that's there's also a 5-way tie for the last three spots. So we're not going to go over all those.
No, I mean it's worth also mentioning that their one loss, the Rams, was to the Bills, who are 4-0. So and they lost that game by 3 points in Buffalo. So for whatever that's worth. All right, well let's head over to the AFC. Speaking of the Bills. So they have beaten the Jets, Giants, Rams, and Raiders, who cumulatively have a record of 4-12, but they have a plus 23 net points. Meanwhile, so I mean, it's funny because like you look at that and you're like, well, the Jets and Giants are both winless, and then you have the Rams who are 3-1 and the Raiders who are 2-2. So you have like two really bad teams, at least that are winless teams, and then you have two teams that are better. Presumably better.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then we'll get to the Chiefs. So let's get to the Chiefs, though, who are also 4-0. They have, to me, the most impressive record. They beat the Texans, who are 0-4. They beat the Chargers, who are 1-3, but they also beat the Ravens, who are 3-1, and the Patriots, who are 2-2, for a cumulative record of 6-6. But they also have 47 net points. So they kind of have the best combination of opponent record plus net points. They're only behind the Packers at this point. Oh, sorry, the Packers and Ravens. We'll get to the Ravens.
Staying true to their championship form so far.
I mean, so far, it's something. Then next, and we're going by record winning percentage. So the Steelers are next. They have wins over the Giants, Broncos, and Texans, but that is only a record of their cumulative record is 1-11 for 20 and plus 22 net points. So not a good indicator for the Steelers, at least, as you know, whether to buy or not. And then we'll move on to Tennessee. The Titans have wins over the Broncos, Jaguars, and Vikings. Slightly better record than the Steelers. Their opponent's cumulative record is 3-9, but they only have plus 6 net points. So they have literally won by, except for the Bears, I think, the smallest possible margin possible, really, at this point.
Yeah. Well, each one of the teams they've beat only has one win. So.
Right, exactly. Meanwhile, the Browns, who are also 3-1, they have wins over the Bengals, Cowboys, and Washington. And a 3-9 cumulative opponent record, but they are minus 2 net points. Their one loss was a blowout, I think, to the Ravens. I can't remember what the score was, but it was really, really ugly, if I remember correctly. So that's why they're in the minus now. So they are making progress, at least back up, but it certainly is, at least at the snapshot after 4 weeks, not a great look for the Browns. Speaking of the Ravens, they did beat the Browns and the Washington football team and the Texans, but that cumulative record is 4-8, mostly on the strength of the Browns schedule, but they do have a plus 49 net points. So when they win, they usually win pretty big.
Yep.
So, and then finally the Colts, they have wins over the Vikings, Bears, and Jets. So these are all the teams that would be in the playoffs as of today. And the Colts have wins over the Vikings, Bears, and Jets for a cumulative record of 4-8. But also plus 47 net points. So again, as with although I think that most of the, they beat the Vikings pretty well, pretty good, and the Jets pretty good. So they actually have a couple of big wins in there, pretty comfortable.
It's funny. So. There's like definitely common themes between the teams with good records and the teams that they've beat that all have bad records.
Right. Yeah. If you look at these teams, I mean, like
it's the haves and the have nots,
the teams that are Yeah, exactly.
After only 4 weeks, though, I guess that you can't really expect too much different than that.
I guess that's right. But I guess what's strange is that all the teams, it's not strange. It's now kind of obvious. But if you played the Giants, the Jets, the Texans, you're going to be you would be in a spot for the playoffs right now. Like you just have really. There are some really, really bad teams out there. And already after week four, I would say that the Raiders, and I'll just pick them because they're my team, they were not, they were below average last year. And if you played them early in the season, though, they would be, they were still kind of feisty. They had some, moxie and they were able to pull out a couple of good wins. But by the end of the season, they really had kind of lost all their juice. It's so strange to see teams just start out and stumble so badly. It doesn't mean that they can't recover. I'm intrigued by the Giants. I don't know why, but of all the teams that are struggling at the beginning of the season, for some reason, the Giants are sticking out to me as being like possibly a team that is able to put it together, especially because nobody seems to want the NFC East. Nobody seems to want to win that division and get destroyed in the first round of the playoffs. But
you could be right. I just don't see that.
Fair enough. I mean, I don't necessarily see it either. I'm just kind of intrigued. But it's I don't remember a season in which there were teams that were just so bad.
Yeah.
And it's strange to see these other teams all feast on kind of the same set of bad opponents. So
Yeah, I mean, I guess this is totally going off script here, and we didn't plan this at all. But out of these teams that have these terrible records, you know, only one win or zero wins after 4 weeks, in your opinion, which is the most surprising? For me, it's the Texans. I didn't think the Texans were going to be like, well, actually, I think the Texans were one of the teams that I picked to go have like a super good record this year when we did that preseason prediction. We went through game by game and all that stuff. I don't know why I thought that, but especially since they got rid of DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah.
That was probably a really bad prediction. But yeah, I did not think that they would be 0-4, and neither did they apparently, because they just fired Bill O'Brien.
Right.
And,
right.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the I'm surprised about the Falcons, honestly. Like, the way that they've lost games has really caught me off guard, because they've had sizable leads against both the Cowboys and the Bears, and Dan Quinn is supposedly a defensive-minded coach, which means that when it's time to shut down a comeback, that, you know, I figured that his defense would do the work. That one caught me. It is pretty surprising. The Texans, I am not surprised about that, but the Vikings, I think, is probably the other team that really stands out as being a team that I'm surprised that they are 1-3 at this point.
I'm surprised by that too, yeah.
You know, and I mean, it is after only four games, I guess you look at it and think, 1-3, like, it's only two games, you know, like, you did, and the Vikings have played, they play the Packers, who we already said were a good team, and now I'm blanking on who else they played. I feel like they played at least one other good team. But in any case, the point is that it isn't really like, but nevertheless, the fact that they ended up like on the wrong side of 500 after four games, it does surprise me a little bit. So we'll, you know, the Vikings Seahawks is the only exciting game in week 5, as far as I can tell. And so we'll see how they end up doing. But that one, that's the other team that really surprised me as being kind of a weak team, or at least having a bad record.
I agree 100%. I think the Vikings could just as easily be at least 2-2, if not 3-1. So I think they got handled pretty good by the Packers, but Aaron Rodgers in FU mode.
Yeah.
He's going to take care of the Vikings every time.
We'll see. Hopefully, it'll be a fun ride, if nothing else. So,
All right. Well, let's move into the recap of the remaining games that were not either bagels, anti-fectas, what did you call those?
No, anti-exactas.
Anti-exactas or trifectas or exactas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There weren't that many.
These were just the normal games.
Right, exactly. All right, well, let's go to, speaking of Minnesota, so Vikings were 3.5-point road underdogs at the Houston Texans. The total was 53.5. The Vikings won outright 31-23, which meant that they won and covered the spread, and the game went over the 53.5 by just a bit. Our crowd had a narrow victory for the Texans, 26-24, which meant that the crowd thought that the Texans would win, but the Vikings would cover in a thread the Neil prediction, and the game would stay under the 53.5. So the crowd got the cover correct, but missed out on the win and the total. This game, by the way, the Texans are winless, but it was came down to a very, very close play at the goal line. On fourth down, that at least kept the game from going to overtime. So it wasn't like it was an 8-point victory for the Vikings, but it wasn't like the Texans weren't knocking on the door at the very end of the game. So just one thing to keep in mind when thinking about making your predictions about the Vikings in week 5.
All right. Well, moving on to the next game, featured my Seattle Seahawks in Miami against the Dolphins. Seahawks were 5.5-point road favorites, and the total was 54.5 when it was all said and done. Remember, that did not factor into my barrel wager.
Right. Paul, when he made his barrel wager, it was still at 54.
Yep. Thankfully. Seahawks won the game when it was all said and done, 31-23, which meant that the Seahawks won and covered the spread. The total went just under that 54.5. the crowd thought the Seahawks would win going away, basically 32-23, which meant the crowd thought the Seahawks would win pretty easily and cover that spread by almost 9 points, and that the total would go just a hair over 54.5. So the crowd gets 2 of 3 right.
Right. And, you know, it's worth pointing out that the crowd almost had the exact score. I mean, you know, 32-23 is pretty close to 31-23.
It's very close, yeah.
You know, if you, I can pull out my abacus and show you. Abacus is not a euphemism, by the way. It's an actual...
It's a
calculator
thing.
Yes. Thing. Okay. All right. Well, let's get off that subject as fast as possible.
Sounded similar to that sneeze you did earlier.
The Jaguars were in Cincinnati. The Bengals were 2.5-point home favorites. The total was 49. The Bengals won relatively easily, 33-25, which meant that they won and covered the spread, and the game went over the 49. Our crowd had a narrow victory for the Bengals, 24-23, meaning that they were still on the Minshew mania train, but not so much on the Stogie Joe Burrow train. But in any case, the Bengals winning, but the Jaguars covering and the game staying under the 49. So the crowd missed, just got the Bengals win correct, but missed out on the cover and the total.
All right. The Patriots were in Kansas City, where the Chiefs were 7-point home favorites. The total was 52.5. Kansas City won the game relatively easily, 26-10, facing off against a backup quarterback, as Cam Newton was out on the COVID injured reserve list. Is that what they call that?
Sure.
He tested positive for COVID during the week, so he couldn't play. He could have played, probably. Just put a mask on.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know.
Yeah, well, you know, we won't get into that rules. Too much, but yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's almost like they just, you know, you can't take any chances. So even he was wearing a mask, you can't take any chances.
I kid.
All right, fair enough. All right, we'll get into my Raiders. The Bills were in Las Vegas.
Wait, you didn't let me do the game.
Oh, I thought you were done. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Keep going. Yeah, what do you got to say about this Bills Kansas City game featuring Brian Hoyer and Jared Stidham?
I don't know. Chiefs won the game. Crowd thought the Chiefs would win. Crowd thought the Chiefs would cover. They did. Crowd thought the total would go over. That's where they missed.
Yep. Yeah. And I'm sorry about that. Sorry about that, Paul.
No, no worries. We're drunk at this point. Yeah. Doesn't matter.
Exactly. All right. Well, moving on. I think if there's one thing that our crowd is not particularly tuned into is the fact that, like, when there's news, I don't think our users go back and make their predictions and update their predictions accordingly. So, which is a little bit unfortunate because, you know, if you knew that Cam Newton was out, I'm quite sure that, you know, you would have expected a lower scoring game from the Patriots. So
I was kind of worried about that.
Yeah. Well, in any case, it was, nothing new, but hey, if you're listening to this now, like, just remember to make your update your predictions. You know, and by the way, one quick thing. If you see in the app, you'll see that the spread has changed. So, for example, if you predicted the Chiefs to win by, say, 10 points, but the spread is 7.5 when you make your prediction, you can see if the spread has moved down to 7. And if it moves down to 7 and you still think the Chiefs are going to win by 10, it's in your best interest to update your prediction. Just hit predict again, because then you get the 7-point spread instead of the 7.5-point spread that you made the first time.
Good point.
You follow? You see? You with me, Paul?
Thank you for that public service announcement. Yeah, so, it's very helpful.
All right. So always make sure to go back and check on Sunday morning. Hit the predict button if you want to get the newest odds, if they're to your advantage. All right, well, let's move on. As I was saying before Paul cut me off, after I cut him off, the Bills were in Las Vegas. The Raiders were 3-point home underdogs. The total was 53. The Bills won in a, I would say, a closer game than maybe the score would indicate. The 30-23, which meant that they won and covered the spread, but the game ended up pushing on the total. The crowd had the Bills winning in a narrow victory, 26-25, which meant that the crowd thought the Bills would win, but the Raiders would cover, and the game would stay under the 53. So the crowd got the Bills win correct. They missed on the Raiders cover, and the game pushed on the total. Let me go into this in for just a bit. So the interesting thing about this is I drew a very clear parallel between the Patriots game from week three for the Raiders and the Bills game in week four. In both games, the Raiders were losing or were down at the end of the half. They drove down the field, scored a touchdown, and to make it a one-score game at half. Then they get the kickoff in the second half. In the Patriots game, the Raiders drove down the field, missed the field goal. Now, and then it kind of set the tone for the rest of the game. In the second half of the Bills game, they drove down the field and then kicked a field goal and made it a one-point game. And then they just shot themselves in the foot with, you know, a little bit of bad luck. Like sometimes, I've heard with some regularity that losing fumbles is partially bad luck. Like it's not, you know, if you put the ball on the ground, you're putting the ball on the ground. Like ball security is important, but losing it three times in a half you expect to kind of recover one of those. Anyway, the point is that they had a couple of fumbles in the second half, and ultimately they lost by a touchdown, including like they were driving down the field. And Darren Waller, who's very reliable, he ended up getting the ball punched out by Josh Norman, who was still in the league. And the Bills recovered, and that ended one of the drives. And there was also a point, I have to make this point. Paul already heard me complain about this. The Raiders on a different drive were driving down the field. There was a roughing the quarterback penalty. But at the same time, Josh Jacobs caught the ball, lowered his head as a guy was coming up, I forget who it was, but to tackle him, and he was called for initiating contact with his helmet, so it was an offsetting penalty. So instead of the Raiders, you know, getting to the 20 on and a first down, they had to, you know, redo the series or that particular down. And I can't remember what the outcome of it but it was just like when you are the Raiders and let's be clear. Like I was looking at I'm really going on and on. Sorry about this, Paul. But we were comparing Russell Wilson's stats to Derek Carr's stats, right? And Russell Wilson is clearly one of the leading contenders for the MVP. He's got 16 touchdowns. He's got two interceptions. But the difference between the two players is not that significant when you think about the number of yards. It's like 200 yards difference. You know, Russell Wilson has twice as many touchdowns, but Derek Carr has zero interceptions. There's a lot of very similar stats across. Nevertheless, when you have a quarterback that doesn't go for the throat the way that Russell Wilson does, you need these plays to not go the other way. Yeah. And that is what has really marked the last two games, is that the Raiders have had these plays, whether it's penalties, whether it's fumbles, whatever, that have not gone their way, and they are just not teams that can, they are not a team that can absorb those kinds of mistakes. And that's what's happening right now. And they have to go up against the Chiefs this week. You know, the Chiefs are heavy, heavy favorites. I don't see any reason why the Chiefs it's going to be a game. Maybe the Raiders keep it within 10 points, but otherwise I don't see it. We'll see. It's really going to come down to the opponents that they have that are really more their level, and then hopefully they have a puncher's chance if they are able to make it into the playoffs. So, end of speech.
All right. The Falcons were in Green Bay, where the Packers were 7-point home favorites. That was good analysis, by the way, Chris.
Thank you.
I don't mean to make light of it.
No, that was good. Well, we can't all be have 4-0 teams, in our back pocket. No,
I know. I feel very lucky. It's playing with house money.
Yeah.
For sure. Well, and your point about Derek Carr, and comparing him statistically to Russell Wilson, like you're not, I appreciate the fact you're not making an argument comparing those two quarterbacks, but you're right. You know, there's not a huge difference. But it's really your underlying point there too, is it's not Derek Carr's fault that the Raiders are losing these games necessarily. So
yeah. I mean, let me just be clear. Nobody is going to accidentally put Derek Carr in the MVP race. whereas Russell Wilson most assuredly is deserving to be considered, you know, if he continues on his trajectory, because I think he's on pace for 750 touchdowns or something like that, whatever it is. but the point is, it's more about like just kind of looking at it as that they are, you know, just it, the Raiders are a team that cannot absorb these kinds of bad kind of bad luck results. Whereas it feels like the Seahawks,
bad calls, fumbles, weird funky turnovers.
Right. Whereas if you look if you look back at the Seahawks Sunday night game against the Patriots had that pick six, and I don't know that the Raiders recover from a pick six like that the way that the Seahawks did. There's just something about Russell Wilson's leadership that Derek Carr doesn't have. So that's I'll leave.
There we go.
Okay, leave it there.
No, that was good.
Okay,
I appreciate it. Yes, like I said, Falcons were in Green Bay, empty Lambeau Field, which was weird. the Packers were 7-point home favorites. The total was 57. Packers won 30-16, which meant they covered the spread in the win, and the total went pretty well under the 57. The crowd also thought that the Packers would win and cover the spread, but that the total would go over 57, so that's where the crowd went wrong, but they got 2 out of 3 correct.
Yeah, that was an easy win for the Packers. It really felt like
it was. Yeah, and that wraps up the rest of the games to recap. So let's get on to the individual results. Our winner chicken dinner series. Our weekly winners. So prediction score wise, Brian Cole, loyal listener and predictor, reclaims the weekly title with a solid 55 points. The crowd actually beat Brian this week.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, crowd had 56 points. So Brian was 11-4 straight up, 10-3-2 against the spread, and 5-7-3 on the over-under. He had 3 bullseyes, which were predictions that were exactly right, score predictions. We had no perfect predictions again through week 4, so we still have no perfect predictions across the first 4 weeks of the season. Although we did have 9 predictions that earned 7 points, which is pretty impressive. So 7 points is you got the winner, the spread, and the total correct, plus 1 bonus point for getting one of those things exactly correct. One team score exactly correct, or the over-under, like the total exactly correct, or the spread exactly correct. Chris, why don't you cover the stake stacks?
All right, well... in keeping with the winner for the prediction score, Brian swept the leaderboard all the way across. He got the trifecta this week. He had the biggest stake stack. He wagered, I have to laugh about this, he wagered 90 stakes across all 15 games, which means that's 6 per game. That means he was wagering 3 stakes every game on both the spread and the over-under for it. But he netted 15, which means that he... ended up with the biggest stake stack of the week.
He gets the put his money where his mouth is award for, sure. for this week.
Yeah. I thought that was bad strategy, but you know, worked out for him this week. I think it's primarily my fault because I suck at picking the... I put my stakes down on the wrong games every single time. But nevertheless...
It's an art.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. I you know, I should just tell people where I'm putting my stakes and where my barrel wagers is, and you just bet the opposite, and you will do just fine.
Something to be said for that.
But in any case, meanwhile, those 15 stakes on the 90 wager is a return of 17%, which is takes the top spot on the return on investment category. So he edged out our old friend Gus Dawson, who was with us last year, and he's back this year along with Jesse Harris. So welcome back, Gus and Jesse. We hope you, either of you, we hope you edge out Brian soon because we are sick of him winning.
Yes, we are.
Stop winning. Love you, Brian, but stop winning. Come on.
Stop winning.
Yeah, leave some winnings for the rest of us.
Leave some meat on the bone.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. All right, well, let's wrap this thing up. Head on over to steakhousesports.com. You can spell steak either way, again, like the meat or the bet, to download the app and start predicting. Remember, winning a week gets you not only a prestigious shout out on this here program, but also the chance to win a $25 gift card to Amazon, or I don't know.
Just pick
sip of whiskey or something like
whatever,
that.
Whatever,
odds do update daily, so... please make sure to check your predictions before game time. And as Chris so nicely mentioned, if you want to update your predictions after seeing that odds have changed for the spread or over under, and they go in your favor, please go back and hit that update button before game time. Also, make sure to check the schedule and be tuned into it. We're starting to see a lot of rescheduled games due to COVID tests, positive tests, and things of that nature. So, again, this week we've got a couple of rescheduled games, and you never know what's going to happen in the future. So, make sure you're staying tuned into all those updated schedules as well, and you get your predictions in time and pay attention to the injury report and the COVID reserve list. Feel free to compete directly against myself and Chris by joining our SHS crowd on the app. That's a little sub crowd that we have. If you want to join that, you can.
Although, you know, let's be honest, like, you know, there's no real difference at this point.
We got nine predictors.
With only 10 predictors.
Our crowd is a sub crowd.
Join the crowd if you want, but our sub crowd. But
yeah, forget that. Just join.
Yeah, just play.
Submit some damn predictions. Yeah. Be done with it. You can also follow
your friends
us.
Too. Come on, guys.
Yeah, come on. You can also follow us on social media. We're on Twitter, handle at House of Stakes, facebook.com/steakhousesports. Of course, you can always contact us via email at podcast@steakhousesports.com. And, you know, social media is a great way to spread the word. So please give us a shout out, retweet us, send tweets to us.
Sure.
Send us your barrel wagers.
Yeah, exactly. Hashtag barrel wager.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you want to see what a barrel wager really looks like, look at one of our tweets to each other with our weekly barrel wagers. We kind of follow like a specific format that makes it fun and easy. It's our actual barrel wager, what team's going to win or, you know, cover the spread, what the prediction is, and then usually just like a little one-liner that sort of justifies why we think we're going to be right.
Yep, and just a reminder, if you see what I predict, go the other direction. That it seems to be the winning formula.
Yeah, so send us your barrel wagers. It's a fun way to get engaged.
Yep.
Also, if you're in the reviewing mood, please go ahead and give us a rating or a review on the iTunes app. It really helps people discover the show.
All right, well, thanks, Paul, and welcome back. It's great to have you.
Thank you.
You know, I miss you terribly. So, all right, well, we are a quarter way through the season, friends, and only one game canceled so far. So, though Tennessee is doing its best to mess up the season for everybody, nice job, Titans. Well, anyway, there is still a lot of ground to cover through the rest of the season and a lot of quality matchups still to play, although not so much in weeks five. Really, Vikings-Seahawks is the only interesting game on the schedule. But nevertheless, we'll be back next week when we'll talk about whether the crowd can continue to keep its head above water. We hope to see you then. So until next week, I'm Chris.
And I'm Paul.
And we hope you enjoy your steaks. Thanks for listening.